Okay, welcome committee to the second day of our December meeting, and we're starting off with agenda paper 5, a question on cloud computing, and I believe I'm handing over to Wei Xun.
Thank you, Sue, and we will start with agenda paper 5. The committee received a request about the customer's accounting for cost of configuring or customizing the supplier's application software in a SaaS arrangement. Paragraph 6 outlines the fact pattern described in the request. Paragraphs 10 to 20 summarize our outreach and additional research on this matter, and paragraphs 21 to 51 include our analysis. Based on our analysis, we conclude that in determining the accounting for such costs, a customer considers whether applying IAS 38, it recognizes those costs as an intangible asset. The assessment of whether those costs result in an intangible asset depends on the nature and output of the configuration or customization performed, and in our view, would often result in no intangible asset being recognized. If the customer does not recognize those costs as an intangible asset, it applies paragraph 68 to 70 of IAS 38 in accounting for those costs. Paragraph 69A requires a customer to consider when a supplier performs the service that relates to the configuration or customization costs, but does not include requirements on the identification of the services the customer receives and when the supplier performs those services. In our view, applying paragraph 11A of IAS 8, the customer applies requirements in IFRS 15 that deal with similar and related issues in making that assessment. Paragraph 52 summarizes our conclusion on this matter. I will now direct you to question 1 on page 19 and ask whether you agree with our analysis regarding the application of the requirements in IFRS standards.
Okay, thank you very much. Donna, would you like to start?
So firstly, I am in agreement with the paper that the staff has presented. I thought that the paper was well thought out, and the connection to IFRS 15 with respect to the supplier's view was actually a trick I would have missed. So well done to the staff on that one. But in general, I have to say that I do agree with the proposed treatment and with the consensus reached by the staff. In particular, though, I do think that the one paragraph needs to just be included in our release, which is paragraph 42, should be included in the tentative decision. But in general, I mean, it is concise. It makes it clear what can and can't. I think the question was answered very nicely with respect to when it's not an intangible asset, whether it could be a prepayment or an expense. So I'm very happy with the paper. Thanks.
Thank you, Donna. Carsten.
Yeah, quite similar, I guess. You know, first of all, big compliment to the staff. I think this is a very good analysis of the requirements in IFRS. Not an obvious one, but I completely agree with the analysis in the paper. So, no comments on the analysis. Thank you.
Thanks, Carsten. Jens.
Thank you, Sue. I can echo what Carsten just mentioned. I fully agree with the conclusion of the paper. However, I have two minor comments. One comment is, for me, in the submission, we distinguish between configuration and customization. And I do think in the paper, we could draw the distinction more clearer that we, because I think as we all agree that for configuration, you would never, ever come to a recognition as an asset, and for customization, as I read the paper, there might be rarely, if ever, cases. So I would like to recommend that we draw the line clearer between configuration and customization. And then, as Carsten mentioned, and I think Donna too, I think the idea of referencing as an accounting policy to IFRS 15 is well drafted. My only question would be, is this the only accounting policy choice that could apply now as it is drafted, that IFRS 15 is the only route? I do think US GAAP is precluded as long as you find something within IFRS. I doubt that IFRS 15 would be the only route I could take to come up with an accounting policy. It would be the first one that came into my mind too, but now it is stated that this is the only accounting policy. And I think it's rather, I would say, it's a might. You might come up with IFRS 15 rather than you shall.
Okay, thank you, Jens. Yang Su.
Yes, I, like others, I want to say I agree with the staff analysis and conclusion. Actually, when I first read the staff paper, I was a little bit uncomfortable with applying IFRS 15, the revenue recognition standard, onto the expenses defined in IAS 38. But you know, the more I think about it, the more it makes sense to me. So now I should say I'm comfortable with that, at least in this fact pattern. So I want to say I agree with the staff analysis and conclusion.
Thank you. Bob?
I also agree with the elements of the staff analysis. I think they've got the model right, all the elements of the model in there. I would have come at it a little bit differently in the ordering of the elements of the model. I mean, I think you first have to look at the unit of account. You first have to identify all the elements that the entity is going to be receiving. And is it distinct? I agree with the analogy to IFRS 15. One thing that isn't in here that I think you also may have to do oftentimes is you have to allocate the consideration to the different elements. And I believe you would do that based on relative fair value. I don't know if we want to note that in here. After you identify the elements and you allocate the consideration, then you look at the, do I have an intangible asset? And if not, do I look at whether it is part of another asset, which in this case it wouldn't be because the SaaS arrangement is a service, it's not an asset, and then expense as incurred. So I think all the elements are there. I just would have ordered it in a different way. I'm a little disappointed in the submission didn't ask us to address data migration and conversion because I think... and development of interfaces, because I think it would have been helpful for users to see that in the agenda decision, just more completeness, so they don't have to go through and, you know, do more thinking about it. But, I mean, they can get there because I think all the elements of the model are in the agenda decision. So I'm happy with the agenda decision.
Thanks, Bob. Bertrand.
Yes, so I agree with the staff analysis and conclusion. I think the outcome is the one that suits or that is the suitable answer for the solution provided by the committee. Contrary to Jens, I think there is no other road than IFRS 15 to put in regards to IS 38. And that is because the element we're analyzing relates to an intellectual property license. So I think, as I've already said here in the past, on the first submission we received on SaaS accounting, I'm of the view that there is a really a objective notion between IS 38 and IFRS 15 relating to intellectual property licenses. And this relates also to the analysis made by the staff. So I think there is only one road, effectively, that the staff follows, which is IFRS 15.
Thank you. Guy.
Thanks, Sue. I would also commend the staff on what I thought was a superb analysis that was put together here. You know, I do have... three or four comments that are on the margin of the analysis that I'll mention. Perhaps the first comment I'll mention relates to paragraph 30 of the paper, which was acknowledging that, you know, there although perhaps not going to occur very often, there could be some circumstances where customization might result in an intangible asset. And paragraph 30 gives the example when customization results in writing additional code that is accessible only by the customer. I wasn't quite sure what that actually meant. Accessible sounded to me very close to sort of a right of access, which we already have said does not give rise to a software asset. And so that example that was given in paragraph 30 caused me some pause and reminded me of some of the debates we had on the original submission a couple years back on circumstances that may or may not give rise to a software asset, and our debate around, you know, being able to take possession and run it ourselves, et cetera. So that example given in paragraph 30 caused me some pause. I wasn't necessarily convinced that would or would not give rise to an intangible asset. That being said, it hasn't made its way into the TAD. We just in the TAD say it's likely not often that we'll have an intangible asset, which I would tend to agree with. Picking up on Jens's comment about the analogy to IFRS 15 through the hierarchy, in my mind, that is a completely reasonable and logical analogy to draw navigating through the hierarchy. I did have some slight reservation about us going as far as saying it would be required. Recognizing IFRS 15 was designed from a customer perspective, it did cause me some pause to say it's absolutely required. You know, again, it's perfectly reasonable to apply that judgment through the hierarchy, and so I'm no disagreement with that. Just some pause on whether I'd go as far as saying it's required. I'm not sure as well that sort of clear statement that it's required is evident in the TAD. I don't think I have a concern with how the TAD has been drafted on that front. It was more the statement in paragraph 42 that it would be absolutely required. The other comment I'll raise is in paragraph 45 of the paper, where we highlight that the assessment would not differ depending on who provides the service, the cloud computing supplier or a third party. You know, I agree we would if we're applying IFRS 15 to identify the distinct services being provided, we would do so in the context of services provided by a third party or services provided by the cloud computing supplier. However, I don't think we could ever conclude in a contract where the customer is contracted as principal with a third party that they could ever combine those services with services in a contract with the cloud computing supplier. The outcome of that is those are likely to be separate and accounted for differently when they're provided by a third party rather than the cloud computing supplier. And I don't think paragraph 45 was suggesting otherwise, but I'm wondering if we could perhaps make that point a little bit more clearly in the tentative agenda decision. So I'll come back to that when we discuss the wording in the tentative agenda decision. Maybe the last point I'll mention relates to the point I just made. I think the outcome of this, if I think about a scenario where configuration and customization is being supplied by a third party rather than the cloud computing supplier, it seems that the costs incurred for configuration and customization are going to be expensed up front as those services are provided. In circumstances where they're provided by the cloud computing supplier, it strikes me that they're most often going to be determined to not be distinct in the context of the contract and would be recognized over the term of the cloud computing arrangement. And, I think that is the natural outcome of the technical analysis as laid out in the paper. I have no disagreement or concern with that technically, but it does sort of point out that, you know, it is rather odd that what are essentially very similar services could have quite different recognition points in the financial statements in terms of when they're expensed. All I wanted to say about that is, you know, that's something we should perhaps be thinking about as we look forward in terms of work plans and whatnot, and the idea that a project on accounting for intangibles is something that you know, is perhaps important and may come through in the agenda consultation that the board is working through to develop the go forward work plan. So I'll stop there, Sue. Thanks.
Thanks, Guy. John.
Yeah, I have comments that are similar to Guy and to Jens regarding the application of IFRS 15, and I worry about it being, let's say, codified, for lack of a better word, into an agenda decision as the way to analyze the contract, just given that there's obviously a great deal of uniqueness from contract to contract that could be the number of the suppliers that could be involved. And I think it's difficult to say that categorically it would be the way to analyze the contract or the services that are being provided. I also look back at the March 2019 agenda decision on SaaS contracts, and I noted that the committee at that time did not go so far as to get into any analysis on the attribution of service, any analysis of looking to IFRS 15 in that instance. And I wonder if it's really prudent to go further this time to get into that pattern of recognition. Obviously, there's a lot of contracts, whether it's related to IAS 38 and services or other contracts, where there's not specific guidance today in IFRS on the pattern of recognition of expenses related to those contracts. And I'm reluctant to have this agenda decision be one of the first that I'm aware of. So to me, the analysis up until the point of going strictly to IFRS 15, I think is spot on, and I think it's well thought out. I'm just a bit uncomfortable, well, more than a bit, I'm uncomfortable with pointing to IFRS 15 as the guidance on where to go next in terms of assessing and determining the pattern of recognition of expense.
Can I just make a couple of comments, John, not to pick on you, but because I think this is an important part of the discussion. I think one of the nice things about the paper and potentially about the tentative agenda decision is sort of an illustration of how to apply the hierarchy in IAS 8, so it's sort of useful in that regard. And I hear what you're saying, but if you look at the words in the tentative agenda decision, it does say that the committee observed that IFRS 15 includes requirements about identifying promised goods or services, blah, 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 blah. And then it says, in the fact pattern described, those requirements deal with issues similar and related to. So it's sort of trying to build on the words, I think, that come from IAS 8 without sort of saying they're applicable. And I think in some of the discussions we've had since the paper was posted, we wondered whether, and it might help deal with your issue, so that's why I'm flagging it, whether it might be better in addition to those words, which sort of aren't saying you have to apply 15, but just noting there's similar issues, so sort of referring to the hierarchy, rather than saying in applying the requirements in 15, which sort of sounds like a direction that's what you have to do, that maybe something that was more to do with saying, with reference to the requirements in 15, you would, as opposed to sort of saying, sort of implying that you are in 15 and applying 15. And I just wondered whether, given the words in the tentative agenda decision, which are sort of softer, they're not saying you're in 15, does that not help you, or do you still have...
I think from a practitioner standpoint, I think it's going to create a rebuttable presumption that you're going to IFRS 15 in practice, because it is the only path that's illustrated. And I'm not aware of other agenda decisions that might be similar that could lead you down a different path. And I guess the question I have, and I apologize, I wasn't able to go back and spend enough time with the March 2019 analysis to see if this was brought up and explicitly discussed. But in that agenda decision, there was no decision to go further to talk about the service and the rendering of the service in the SaaS contract being looking to IFRS 15 for the pattern of recognition. And so I was curious, and perhaps maybe Sue, from your perspective or from the other committee members, if that was a topic of discussion, why wasn't that more explicitly incorporated into the agenda decision at that time? Appreciating it's a slightly different issue, or it is a different issue, but they're tangentially related. And if there is a compelling reason to go further this time than we went in the past, so that's my concern, is that it becomes a rebuttable presumption, which may be appropriate, but I'm worried about a broader use of the agenda decision and it prejudicing the analysis.
Yeah, okay. It's always a fair thing for us to check. Katrina's sitting up and looking excited, so I think she wants to respond to this.
Hopefully, if I can be helpful, John. So just going back to, you know, the previous question the committee discussed on cloud computing, and in fact, these arrangements, of course, and specifically about, you know, what happens in the context of, you know, well, what does a customer do in terms of the fees it's paid for, you know, right to access the supplier software. I think there, by the way, the first to answer your question directly, no, this aspect now of sort of possibly referring to IFRS 15 didn't come up in that respect. But I think it's because the question we had before was very much a question of, is it an asset? Is it a service? So in the context, and the question was just about the fees being paid for the right to access the supplier software. So the agenda decision that the committee, you know, published at that time very much focused on the question of, is there an intangible asset is there a software asset? So we both investigated, was there a software lease or a software intangible asset, or instead, is this a service? So it didn't go further at that time. I think if it's helpful as well, I just want to point out, and I think Donna mentioned it, that what we say in paragraph 42 of the paper here is pretty critical to our analysis, in the sense that this shouldn't be read at all at us saying every time a customer can't find specific words in a standard, you know, every time a customer is purchasing any good or any service, you know, they'll automatically flip to 15. Because I think that Henry will confirm and the board members will confirm, look, IFRS 15 was very much written for the supplier's accounting. And so we're not trying to change that at all. It was something very specific here in the words of IAS 38 that really, you know, led us to then, or I suppose, you know, articulating that we really felt requirements in IFRS 15 do deal with similar and related issues. And it's because of those words in IAS 38, which the customer is applying in 69A, that actually requires the customer to determine when the supplier performs the services in accordance with the contract. And it's those very particular words that are requiring the customer to consider when the supplier performs the service that meant we made that link to IFRS 15. So I emphasize that only because I think in any other situation that you're not applying those particular words where a customer isn't applying those particular words in 69A, I think there isn't that same connection at all. And I wouldn't think that via the ICAD hierarchy, you would be getting to IFRS 15.
So, Katrina, I guess when I look at the submission, the question too, it does get to the question of whether there's an asset or expense, but the question doesn't seem to explicitly ask if it is an expense, the pattern of recognition. So are we answering a question that was not asked?
I suppose to me, I felt we needed to go that far. And that's specifically, I think, John, because if I understood the fact pattern, at least very often they're thinking about upfront costs and potentially there's an upfront credit to cash. And the reason then we went that far was that, you know, so you've got step one that says, do I have an intangible asset or a service? So that's the first question about, is there an asset or not? And then when we come through and say there's no intangible asset, you know, when you're in the service zone, if it's a situation where cash has gone out the door up front, which is often the case, you need to answer the question of when do I receive the service to answer the question of, is there a prepayment asset? Or is there not in the specific context of there being a credit to cash? And as I say, it's not always that there's a credit to cash up front, but at least our understanding is that very often there is. So I think we felt we needed to go that far to respond.
I think that's where my discomfort is, and then I'll stop. But the previous agenda decision, it was a similar question, right? Is there an asset or a service? And the conclusion was, well, it's a service. But we didn't then go the next step of get into the pattern of recognition of the service expense. We're going a step further here, even though the question isn't asking us to go a step further explicitly, maybe implied, but it might have been implied back in March of 2009. So that's where I'm a bit uncomfortable going a bit further, because at this moment I'm having a hard time thinking of a situation where it would be the wrong path to go down IFRS 15. But I appreciate that this world of software and technology is quickly evolving, I'm hesitant.
Okay, thank you, John. Good questions. It's good to have a bit of debate on this stuff. Brian.
Thank you, Sue, and hello, everyone. Similar to others, I absolutely agree with the framework as a whole, and I was also planning to comment on the issues we've just been discussing about whether or not IFRS 15 is a natural or the only place to go here. I mean, I spent a lot of time working with 15, and I was on the Revenue Transition Resource Group. I absolutely would not, as a general proposition, go around telling customers they have to apply the vendor's accounting. But I do think this is a really specific and special case. As Petrina was saying, the words in paragraph 69 and 69A of IAS 38 do seem to be setting up a really specific question about recognition and is there a prepayment without telling you how to answer it. So I feel that I am in the hierarchy in this very specific circumstance. Once I'm in the hierarchy, I think it is a hierarchy. You know, it's not a free permission to find something else I like. It's a specific instruction to try and find something relevant. And I do think that the IFRS 15 guidance is very on point on this particular issue. When I look at the history of the distinct test, particularly the second part of the distinct test, which is about whether or not something is distinct in the context of the contract. It has the specific example of services that customize something that's already in the contract, and it says in those circumstances, you probably have something that isn't distinct. And in the background, I know that those requirements were heavily influenced by questions from the software industry. So I naturally think of that guidance as being really on point. Obviously, I would think, is there somewhere else in IFRSs that tell me where to go? And I guess the other natural place I might look, the only other example I can think of in IFRS that has separation guidance for a customer is IFRS 16, because IFRS 16 tells a lessee how to identify lease components and how to separate lease and non-lease components. But that guidance itself is really just a summarized version of what's already in IFRS 15. Now, and we've decided in this case anyway that there is no lease of the intangible. So I can see quite a strong case in this really specific circumstance for looking at IFRS 15. I do think that this circumstance is different to the question in the March 2019 agenda decision. So that agenda decision came out before I joined the committee. And because I hadn't yet joined the committee, I actually wrote a comment letter objecting to some of the references that were in IFRS 15, so in the tentative agenda decision to IFRS 15, because there was a really specific issue about analogizing to IFRS 15 there. And that was because in the March 2019 agenda decision, all of the discussion about it's a service and what you get is a right to access the supplier's software is kind of the opposite conclusion to what you get in IFRS 15. It opposes what the vendor does, because in a lot of these arrangements, the vendor has to classify its contractors involved in either a point in time, a right to use license or a right to access license. And the supplier actually has usually a right to use license, not a right to access. So there's a really specific reason why the March 2019 agenda decision in its final form couldn't really work with IFRS 15. So just on this point, I understand the reservations about asking a customer to look to IFRS 15, but I do think this is a really, really specific case. It's teed up by paragraph 69, and those requirements in IFRS 15 are honestly more on point than anything I can find anywhere else. So I'm quite into the IFRS 15 analogy. Just two other points very briefly before we move on. I was very interested in Bob's point about the fact that there are lots of other costs that the entity will incur. It seems that it would be unwieldy within the agenda decision to have a description of lots and lots of different types of costs, to have a kind of tutorial on the kinds of costs you get in this kind of arrangement. But perhaps if the committee is happy with the framework, with the logic, perhaps the agenda decision could note that this framework would apply to other types of costs. Perhaps that would be helpful. And then my last comment, and it goes back, I think, to some of the things that Guy was saying, is I do think inherent in the analysis are some conclusions that people will typically reach. And I just think it's useful just to flag up what I think those conclusions will often be. So I think under question one, I think, as the guy who introduced the paper noted, it would be pretty unusual to decide you have an intangible, which means that in practice, all of the pressure is going to be on question two. And just my observation of where the vendors get to when they're accounting for these arrangements, I think when they provide the services, they would often conclude that configuration was distinct, but customization isn't. So it's just interesting to bear in mind what kinds of costs might get carried forward under this framework. And I think it's basically customization costs for services provided by the supplier. Anyway, so that's my point. I do think IFRS 15 is the key issue in this agenda decision. Personally, I'm quite comfortable with a reasonably strong statement saying that IFRS 15 is relevant in this particular case.
Okay, thank you, Brian. Goro.
Thank you, Sue. I also agree with and support staff's analysis and conclusion. And the staff's analysis and logic is very clear, very convincing. And even financial statement users can understand why the configuration or customization costs are recognized as expenses rather than the intangible assets. And also what timing the customer would recognize these expenses depending upon if it is distinct or not. The staff's analysis is also very clear that which paragraphs of IAS 38 and IFRS 15 the customer or the preparers should refer. And I would also like to thank the staff for proposing to emphasize the customer should disclose the accounting policy for configuration or customization costs. I believe such a disclosure would be very helpful for the financial statement users to understand the customer's financial statement, particularly in the cases where the use of the SaaS is an essential part of a customer's business model. Despite that, it is a shame that such disclosure is not very common in the current practice, as shown in paragraph 20 of the agenda paper. It appears all the more important for us to include the second sentence from the last in the tentative agenda decision in order to demonstrate the committee is in fact taking care of the user's information needs very seriously. Thank you.
Thanks, Goro. Jim.
I also agree with the staff analysis as well as the conclusion. And in terms of the IFRS 15 case, I think it's very helpful and it's valid approach to introduce IFRS 15 concept in this scenario. Because to decipher the terminology of service, here we're talking about software service, and IFRS 15 is a relevant principle to be used. It's not by analogy, and I think it's a direct requirement to decipher the term software service, whether it's a service or not, or when it's delivered or performed. It's completely performed or is partially, so that we could do the accounting treatment accordingly. So I think this the logic of this paper is very clear, and it should help the users to understand the logic behind. And I see this paper as very valid thought process more than a simple answer. So I think if we release that, it should help. Just making it up. For instance, if we see another question with terminology software inventory, we probably should look at IS2 for the terminology of inventory. It's the same. So I think it's a valid approach to introduce IFRS 15 concept in this scenario. And I think it's very clear. So I like this paper. Thank you.
Thank you, Jim.
Thanks, Sue. I also agree with the staff paper, and I do think that they did an excellent job taking you through a decision tree, I would call it, and how you would assess whether or not you have an intangible asset, and then how to determine whether or not it's a distinct service or not, and how to recognize the expense. I also think that, you know, the linking it to the guidance in IFRS 15 to determine if it's a distinct service, I agree with that. I think that's the appropriate way to look at that to make that assessment. So I definitely agree with the tentative decision.
Thanks, Lisa. Sophie.
Yes, do you hear me? Because I had some issues before. Yes.
Okay.
So I agree with the technical analysis of the staff. And I understand the link with IFRS 15. And I agree to have a link with IFRS 15 because the paragraph 68 to 70 are not sufficient in my mind to answer to the question. Even if the question was quite limited, at the beginning I thought that these paragraphs were sufficient, but I understand what the staff did. However, I am not very comfortable to make the reference to IS 10 and after that to IFRS 15, because IS 8 says that, in fact, the entity should make judgment. But here it is the committee that make judgment and that finally required to apply IFRS 15. So I understand, I fully agree with the fact that we need to apply IFRS 15, and also because in paragraph 69A of IS 38, it is specified that we speak about the suppliers that perform the service. However, specifically required to apply IFRS 15 is maybe not the role of the interpretation committee. I'm not comfortable with that, but I agree with the conclusion. So because I agree with the conclusion, I would agree with the tentative agenda decision, but I am not fully comfortable with the way it is done. And especially when I refer to IFRS 16, paragraph 19, when it deals with leaseback transaction, here there is an explicit reference to IFRS 15. Here in the case of IS 38, there is no explicit reference to IFRS 15. It was my first comment. I have other comments, for instance, much more detail, in fact. For instance, page 15 of the agenda paper, but we have it also in the tentative agenda decision. It is in paragraph I, page 15 at the bottom of the page, the small a, it is said that at the end of the sentence says the customer recognizes the contribution of customization cost as an expense when the supplier configures or customizes the application software. And I'm not sure what it means. Does it mean that we should expense over the period of the configuration or the customization, or at a point of time when the customization and the configuration is finalized? So it's not clear for me, but maybe we need to adjust the wording. So the question behind that is, when you have an expense, when is the performance obligation satisfied, in fact? Is it over the time or at a point of time? I don't know. Last comment. Page 16, at the top of the page, it is in the case of the service is not distinct. It is written, if the customer pays the supplier before receiving the service, it would recognize the prepayment as an asset. I fully agree, but I believe that this is applicable also when the service is distinct. So why not to put this sentence for the two cases? Last comment, sorry. Also, I note that there are disclosures in IS 38 about intangible assets and some disclosures that are required for research and development costs, but nothing about other intangible items that are expense. And they can be material, and I think that it would be good in the future to develop such disclosures.
Thank you, Sophie. Mary?
I'm probably going back a bit to John's challenge on the scope of the analysis. And I think it's really good to be challenging ourselves to say, are we going further? Because sometimes the desire to be helpful, sorry, further than we need to, because sometimes the desire to be helpful can overwhelm us. And one of my favorite lessons in life is the road to hell is paved with good intentions. But when I look back at the original submission, and in particular view three in the submission, I think it is asking the question about the pattern of recognition. And it isn't that we absolutely have to have it in black and white, but I think this is not an instant. You know, so John, I appreciate very much the challenge to say, are we sure we aren't going further than we need to? But I think it's I think it is part of the submission in a way it was not part of the earlier submission, and so appropriate to comment. And then, like Sue, I think this issue is almost like an example or test case of application of the hierarchy that's in IS 8, and it is important that not only, again, channeling John, that we not go too far, but also it is important from my perspective that the committee goes far enough, because I would be concerned if we did something inadvertently that reinforced an incorrect reading of IS 8, which says that first you have to consider material in IFRS standards, the requirements in IFRS is dealing with similar and related issues, and then in the conceptual framework. And that is, you have to consider those before you move on to consider, in certain circumstances, material from other standard setters and, you know, and other guidance. And some of the early comments suggested that, of course, you'd consider 15, but it was entirely elective about whether you used that or moved on to something else. And I think that's an incorrect reading. I think you aren't applying 15 because this is not a contract with a customer, but I think you have to think about, consider the requirements that are in 15 when developing an accounting policy for deciding whether or not this is distinct. And I don't think you can say, yeah, 15 is nice, but I don't like that, and I'm going to move on to something else. And so I'd be worried if in any way we were signaling that considering the requirements of standards was elective rather than mandatory. And I think both Petrina and Brian commented on why the committee would be, why, you know, the staff's analysis, and therefore the committee, if it adopts it in a tentative agenda decision, is coloring within the lines of agenda decision, you know, and not going too far because of the link to the specific requirement in IS 38 that then doesn't have specific guidance to Sophie's point. I think the lack of an explicit cross reference in IS 38 to IFRS 15 does not to me mean it's a barrier to the committee commenting about in this fact pattern the applicability of IFRS 15. Because IAS 8 is the bridge that takes you from one to the other. But I think it is important in terms of coloring within the lines that the committee not overstated by saying that IFRS 15 always applies to making this determination. I think you have to step through the logic of you're trying to apply the paragraphs in IAS 38 that tell you to make this assessment. And then you consider where in IFRS standards there are requirements that deal with related issues. You identify in the circumstance that IFRS 15 does. And to John's concern that it will set up a rebuttable presumption, I think if read properly, it might set that up in conditions that, you know, in circumstances that are the same as this one. But I think you know, that might be how practice operationalizes it. But I think we're also dealing with a situation where practice may be trying to operationalize there's not specific guidance in IFRS standards, so we're going to apply the U.S. GAAP recorded as a prepayment. And this, the analysis in the paper that's summarized in the agenda decision, I think is very helpful in terms of saying people should step through the logic that's in IFRS standards in terms of analyzing what agreements it's entered into. And I think it would not create artificial barriers or presumptions. So, you know, a collection of philosophical thoughts about the staff analysis and what turns up in the agenda decision.
Thanks, Mary. I agree with that, because I think that one thing this agenda decision, and we have to craft it carefully, but one thing it could be useful for is to reinforce. Now, Brian used some good words. I think he said IAS 8 is giving you an instruction. It's telling you you have to consider related and similar and related guidance and other IFRS standards. It's not that, you know, have a look and see if you can find something interesting. It's saying thou shalt do that. And we have to be very careful not to overstep. But it's also it's a thing. You do have to do that. And if we can reinforce that in this agenda decision, I think that would be helpful. Carsten, I think you wanted to come back in on 15 as well.
Yeah, just to respond to what others have said. I mean, I probably keep this short. I mean, I also agree with what you just said, Sue, and with what Petrina and Mary said earlier. So I don't think we are going beyond you know, what we should be addressing in the agenda decision. And I think, you know, I felt the, you know, actually felt the wording in the draft tentative agenda decision was very carefully drafted to, you know, to just say, you know, there is paragraph 69A in IS 38, which, you know, and there isn't any specific guidance in IS 38. So you look at similarly related guidance, you apply the IS 8 hierarchy, and it then just says that IFRS 15 deals with similar and related issues. So I think that's a very balanced wording. So I'm quite comfortable with that and don't think we are going too far.
Thank you. Jens, did you want to come back in?
No, I think it's fine. It's just, I think we had a good discussion on the reference to 15 and this helps. Thank you.
Sorry. Bertrand.
Like Carsten, I will make it short because I agree and I wanted to say something very similar to what Carsten has just said. Maybe just answering to Brian on the reference to IFRS 16, I think it, relating to intellectual property licenses, I think IFRS 16 is of no help. Those licenses are explicitly excluded from the scope of IFRS 16. And for the sale of an IP license, then IFRS 16 refers to IFRS 15. So you need to apply the requirements in IFRS 15 first. And for the acquisition of IP licenses, then IFRS 16 refers explicitly to IS 38. So IFRS 16 can't be used, and it leaves us with IFRS 15 and IS 38. And then a second comment, maybe why I said that there is a bijection between IFRS 15 and IS 38 relating to IP licenses. So I'm effectively a practitioner of IP licenses. And effectively, what we can see is that they are both executory contracts. And when you analyze the legal rights and obligations within the contracts, I mean, they are equivalent and symmetrical legal rights and obligations from an acquirer's perspective and a seller's perspective, and the two are totally bijective. So that's why I think also the reference to IFRS 15 to analyze the way to account for a right to access a license or the related obligations is relevant. The point is effectively, you can see in the standards that there are a symmetry between IS 38 and IFRS 15 relating to the acquisition and the sale of a right to use a license. You do not have such a symmetry, and we have already noticed that, and we had already noticed that when we dealt with the first submissions a couple of years ago, and it relates to the fact that IFRS 15 states explicit requirements in terms of the sale of right to access a license, whereas IS 38 is silent. But it doesn't mean that. So it means first that probably, as some pointed out, effectively something should be done, probably around an amendment to IS 38. But the agenda consultation will probably provide answers to the board on that. But it does not preclude having a form of symmetry between IFRS 15 and IS 38 in terms of acquisition and sale on right to access an IP license. I was maybe a bit longer than initially said I would.
We know that this is like your IFRS 9 for me, you know, your area of passion. Okay, Young Soo.
Yeah, I just want to make a short comment on the issue of scope of the analysis. Maybe not every member agree with me, but I always think that if we have to, or if we can, we have to go more than what we are asked. whenever the agenda decision is published, many people ask me, what if this fact pattern is changed? What if this fact pattern is added? And what's going to be changing the results or the decision? Many people have many other questions. So if we can, and if it is appropriate, I think we'd better to go a little bit more than the question we asked. Especially for this agenda decision, I think question two is very, very important. Question one is very simple, but question two is the one that everybody is interested in. And I think question two is appropriately added into the agenda decision. So, you know, what I'm trying to say is that the scope, I mean, what we are asked is important, but whenever it is possible and whenever we can, I think we can go a little bit more than what we have asked. That's what I want to say.
Thank you. Rika.
Sorry, thank you, Sue. I think I also agree with the staff's proposal or suggestion on the, this paper, and especially about the after applying IS-8 hierarchy assessment, looking at the requirement of IFRS 15 is a really important key to respond to the question we received. Especially because when I compare with the agenda decision in March 2019 and this tentative agenda decisions point, the comparison is a kind of the in. So in March 2019, the agenda paper discussed about the SaaS cloud computing arrangement itself. But this time, what we are discussing right now is the cost of configuring or customizing. Those costs are normally paid in connection with application software. So the separation between the configuration, customization, service cost, and the application software is a really critical point to be discussed when we discussing about how to account for those costs under IFRS. So that that might be a kind of different route to conclude, but I thought that is another way we can also consider. Thank you.
Thank you, Rika. Anne.
Just wanted to come in on Yong Su's point about the usefulness of agenda decisions and his very important points about the number of people that want guidance and want help. And listening to the conversation today on this one, I think one of the strong points has been the model, the logic. People have referred to the logic that the staff present in the paper, and a lot of people have been happy with that. And so it represents a way of reasoning. And I think that's one of the things in this agenda decision that will be useful for people, because I know that the committee is always balancing the focus on the facts and answering the facts in the request and not extending beyond that, but also on the other hand, trying to be useful. So I think this is a good example of where there is a model, there is a process of reasoning that has been demonstrated, and therefore that will provide a usefulness in this agenda decision. Thank you.
Thanks, Anne. Bob.
Yeah, I just had a quick question. As we were talking about the analogy or the use of IFRS 15, which I agree with all the direction of travel we're going down on that. But what occurred to me is many of these are multiple element arrangements. Many things going on as well as with the SaaS that you're paying the vendor for. And so, as I mentioned before, when I first spoke, I said, you know, I thought you had to allocate based on relative fair value. But with all these analogies or saying you need to use IFRS 15, does that mean that I was wrong, that you really should be using in your allocation standalone selling price?
Sue?
So maybe I'll come in on that, and Javed, Weishun, others, please add to anything I say if I don't cover. I suppose, Bob, that you'll note we haven't really, I suppose, analysed or talked about in this paper nor in the tentative agenda decision about allocation. I agree with you, it's that actually a big part of the discussion here is around, you know, multiple elements, and by definition, the starting point, the fact pattern says there are different elements because there is the right to access the software, and, you know, at least there is configuration and customization happening. But I suppose, at least in responding to the question, we didn't feel that the question for us, the question, I suppose, didn't directly ask us about allocation, and I suppose we haven't gone into that aspect of it, even though it's clearly an aspect that you know, a customer would need to get into. So I suppose we have then focused, you know, focused much more on analysing, you know, and almost doing that in a way that says, yeah, do I have an asset, you know, do I not? Because that was kind of the focus of the question. I think the outcome of what we've said is land and what you've, you know, how many pieces you've decided you have. Is this all just one, you know, embedded service that you're getting together with access to the software, or are there separate pieces that will then, you know, determine what allocations you need to do? I'm not sure I've answered your question, but I suppose at least explains we haven't, I suppose, focused on that aspect. It's not that we think it's not there, but we haven't focused on it. And I suppose then to try and answer your question a bit, at least from my perspective, I wouldn't necessarily conclude from our conversation about looking at 15 in terms of identifying, you know, the services as we have. I at least I wasn't thinking that we were necessarily telling people they had to go in and use standalone selling price. That's certainly not what we were suggesting in this.
Okay. So a good discussion, I think. So can we vote now on question two in the paper on page 20, whether the committee agrees with the staff's recommendation not to add a standard setting project to the work plan. Can I get a show of hands, please? And Brian is telling me he agrees as well in the chat box.
That looks like everyone, I think.
Okay, great. Now, we've had a few suggestions on that I think hoping Katrina and the staff have been keeping note of in terms of some comments on the tentative agenda decision. But does anybody else have any drafting comments they wanted to make on the agenda decision? Guy?
Yeah, just to pick up on what I alluded to previously on the paragraph 45 sentence in the paper that said the assessment would not differ depending on who provides the service, the supplier or third party. If I turn to page 23 of the paper and paragraph C in the proposed tentative agenda decision wording, we refer to the supplier throughout. You know, I think we mean when we say the supplier, it's the cloud computing supplier, not a third party supplier of configuration and customization services. But it's not, you know, absolutely clear. And so I wouldn't want someone to inappropriately read the discussion in paragraph C on page 23 to suggest if the customer contracts as principal with a third party supplier to provide configuration and customization services, that they could somehow conclude that is not distinct from the cloud computing services provided by the cloud computing supplier. And so I thought maybe a simple way of just in making that a bit more clear in the agenda decision without a substantial rewrite would simply be in paragraph C2 in the parentheses, where it says, because those services are not separately identifiable from the customer's right to access the application software, I was wondering if we could simply say in parentheses something such as, because the custom configuration and customization services received from the cloud computing supplier are not separately identifiable from the customer's right to access the cloud computing supplier's application software. And then it would, at least in my mind, make it much more clear that that, you know, assessment of whether something is distinct in the context of the contract has to be part of the cloud compute, the contract with the cloud computing supplier.
Thank you, Guy. Carsten?
Yeah, I had a comment on the, that same paragraph. I would probably hesitate a bit about Guy's suggestion just because it, you know, we haven't, it hasn't been analyzed in the paper when the services would be distinct and, you know, how that analysis is influenced by about who is doing these services. So I would hesitate a little bit with that, but I do agree that in that paragraph C, it's maybe not really clear what we mean by the supplier. I think the staff paper was saying in paragraph 45 that, you know, you would apply the same principle, you know, as said, looking at IFRS 15, determining whether they are distinct, that the services are distinct regardless of who provides the service, so regardless of whether it's a supplier or third party. So my suggestion on this would be, you know, just to clarify what we mean by the supplier. And my understanding, it's, you know, whoever is providing the customization or configuration services. So that could be either the software provider or it could be a third-party supplier. And I just thought it would be helpful to clarify that point or make it clear what we mean by supplier. Thank you.
Thank you. John?
I'm actually focusing on the same paragraph, and my thought in response to, I think Bob's question is a good question, and about whether we're getting into the attribution of multiple elements within a contract or not, and wondered if if an appropriate way to address that would be just to clarify that the supplier in this instance is a third party supplier and is different from the provider of the software services, in order to avoid implying that this is getting into attribution of the consideration being paid, but really focused on the recognition of the costs associated with the services described in the paper.
Thanks, John. Sophie?
Yes, in page 22, in the second paragraph, at the line 7, in the sentence starting by the committee observed that in the SaaS arrangement, the customer often would not recognize an intangible asset because it does not have the power to obtain the future economic benefits flowing from the software being configured. I would suggest to replace software being configured or customized by the underlying resource resulting from the configuration or customization. Because here we don't speak about the software, we speak about the cost, for instance, the added cost code. So the cost of customization and configuration. So I think it's the word could be improved. And also we say and to restrict other. And I wonder if we could say and slash or to restrict others, because in very often the customer will have the benefits but will not be able to restrict to others. So I wonder if it's good to say and slash or. So it was my first comment. And the other comments, I already spoke about them before. It is page 23, paragraph I. I believe that I don't know what it means really when the supplier configures or customizes the application software. When do we really need to expense the cost? What does it mean? Configures or customizes the application software. Is it do we expense over the time or just at the end when the configuration and customization is finalized? It's not clear for me. I think that it's a little confusing. And my last point that I already mentioned is that I think that a customer can pay the supplier before receiving the service, even when there is a service that is distant.
Thank you, Sophie. Brian.
Thank you. I'd like to start actually by commenting on precisely the same sentence that Sophie started with. So this is on page 22, the first full paragraph on page 22, and the sentence begins, "The committee observed that." So I had two suggestions about this sentence, because I do find sentences quite long, and also it's slightly unclear as to whether or not this sentence is referring to the original software in the arrangement or the possibility of having a separate intangible. So my first suggestion is just to make it shorter instead of talking about having the power to obtain benefits, et cetera, could just say the customer often would not recognize an intangible asset because it does not control the software being configured or customized. And I wonder if that would just help us get to the point more quickly, and then perhaps extend it slightly by adding words like, "and those activities do not create an asset that is separate from the software," just so that it's clear that the sentence is talking about the fact that you often, because it is qualified, but often do not have an asset of the software or a separate intangible asset. So that was my first suggestion. My second suggestion isn't really a suggestion, it's just an observation on the comments people have been making on page 23, bullet point C, and the reference to the supplier. I do think we need to be a little bit careful here, because I think sometimes you can get a third party in to do the work, particularly perhaps for configuration. In other cases, particularly these off-premises type arrangements where the vendor keeps control of the software, I actually think it would be relatively unusual that they would let somebody come in to do the customization and do the actual coding. So I'm not sure where we got to with people's suggestion on this paragraph, but I think it's like, I don't think we could say third-party supplier, for example. I think it needs to be open, because sometimes the supplier will be a third party. Often, particularly for customization, I think it will be the supplier of the cloud services. The last thing which I've blown hot and cold on is I feel that I know what the answer to the distinct test very often is if the supplier is providing the services, which is that the configuration services are distinct and the customization services aren't. And I think that's pretty clear that customization isn't distinct under paragraph 29 of IFRS 15. And I wonder if directionally it would be helpful to have that nudge about the fact that from the perspective of the supplier, configuration services are typically distinct while customization services are not. But perhaps that goes beyond the discussion we've been having. But anyway, those are my comments on the drafting.
Thank you. Okay, Petrina, can I hand over to you, I think, to walk us through what you've heard and suggestions for wording changes on the agenda decision, and then we can take a vote?
Yes. So the first comments we heard were in page 22, and we had two sets of comments within the first full paragraph there in the middle, with the sentence beginning, "the committee observed." I'm leaning towards, I'm thinking that if we made the change that Brian suggested, it would maybe be helpful to Sophie's suggestion as well. So what I'll propose is that we pick up along the lines of Brian's suggestion, that we don't actually change the content of that sentence in the first breath. We just make it shorter, in a sense, by saying the customer often would not recognize an intangible asset because it does not control the software being configured or customized. And then maybe we cover off Sophie's other piece by adding, "and those activities do not create an asset that is separate from the software." So I would suggest doing that. Then if I turn over the page, I think the next suggestions are in the middle of page 23, bullet C. There was one point, Sue, that you mentioned in your commentary that I'll just mention first of all, right at the beginning of bullet C. And I think it might help some people and possibly be a bit more accurate if there we just said in referring to the requirements in IFRS 15 as opposed to in applying. So I'd propose to change that to in referring to. And then we've had, I suppose, a couple of different suggestions here about whether we go one way or the other in terms of the supplier. I think some suggesting that we should make it clear, at least within the Roman bullet two, that we're just talking about the supplier of the cloud computing, you know, arrangement in a sense, and possibly other people suggesting going the other way, that we make it clearer that this could also relate to third-party suppliers. So on balance, I'm wondering then whether we just leave it as is at the moment and not add anything more about the supplier. A couple of other suggestions, I think, on that bullet C from Sophie. One is, I think Sophie did raise a good point to say that what at the moment we've included at the end of bullet, you know, small Roman two about the prepayment, that possibly could, you know, I think we were thinking of possibly apply more often in the situation. It's not distinct, but I think in theory it could apply even to distinct. So I think we could take that sentence and move it to a bullet D, as opposed to at the end of that sub-bullet. The other suggestion was that Sophie commented on sort of when the services are distinct, whether we could maybe, you know, say more about exactly when this expense is recognised. And I suppose my thinking there is I wouldn't want to go further at the minute because that might very much depend exactly on the contract. And I think what we've got at the minute kind of links in quite neatly to the wording in 69A of IS 38. So I suppose after all of that conversation and that bullet C, what I'm suggesting is we change the opening words to in referring to the requirements in IFRS 15, and that also we just move the very last sentence of that bullet to become its own bullet. And sorry, finally, then I think there was a suggestion by Brian that we might want to give some indication in here about, you know, whether the configuration or customization services might be more often distinct or not distinct. And I suppose, at least from my perspective, I think that would probably push beyond at least our analysis in the paper and the overall discussion. So I wouldn't suggest we add that.
Mary had a question about the lead and the words in paragraph C again, whether it should be more neutral to say referring to IFRS 15 to determine when the configuration or customer services are provided in accordance with the contract. Mary, did you want to...
I didn't want to say anything more. I was just trying to think about responding to some of the concerns I heard that there might be confusion over identifying the supplier. That phrase.
Sorry to put you on the spot, Patrine.
Yeah, no, sorry. And I was just going to respond, if it's helpful, to say I think the reason we use those words is to try and reflect exactly what's said in 69A of IS 38. So it's trying to make that link that you're not directly applying IFRS 15. In a sense, you're applying 69A, which tells you have to determine when the supplier performs the services in accordance with the contract, but then you're referring to. So I think at least we've crafted them to try and make up 69A.
That's a good reason for it. I was just thinking about the comments that I heard from committee members.
That sounds sensible, Patrina. So, given those suggestions that Patrina has made, can I get a show of hands from the committee on who supports the proposed tentative agenda decision, please? And Brian is also supportive?
That looks like everyone, I think all 13.
Excellent. And we're only 5 minutes behind schedule, so that's good outcome. So I suggest that we have a 15-minute break as we had scheduled, so we'll come back at 25 to. Thank you very much.